Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 18th day of January, Anno Domini 2025, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. We all know the problems ByteDance is having with TikTok here in the U.S., and we all have heard complaints about X. There are alternatives, like Blue Sky, Mastodon, and others, but few of them have any sort of big backing or big money behind them. Well, that's about to change. Entrepreneur and investor Mark Cuban is ready to fund a TikTok alternative built on Blue Sky's AT protocol. Investors like Cuban see the potential for a more open social web that includes an ecosystem of apps powered by the same technology that today underpins Blue Sky's social network. The AT protocol is a newer open protocol designed for decentralized social media applications. It's meant to address what some developers thought were shortcomings with the existing decentralized protocol Activity Hub used by Mastodon and other social services. While Blue Sky is the AT protocol's flagship app for the time being, there are many other services now being built with the technology. So if you've got a great idea for the next Twitter, specifically if you've already built an MVP, minimum viable product, get in touch with Mark Cuban immediately. Meanwhile, Mastodon announced Monday that it's shifting its structure over the next 6 months to become wholly owned by a European nonprofit organization, affirming the intent that Mastodon should not be owned or controlled by a single individual. This takes control of the social network away from its previous ultimate decision-maker, Eugene Rochko. As founder, Rochko initially took the reins to ensure the decentralized platform would never be for sale and would be free of the control of a single wealthy individual. His grand vision remains to leave Mastodon users in control of the social network, making their own decisions about what content is allowed or what appears in their timelines. So maybe they bring in Mark Cuban. We all know that social media sites are hugely popular, and we all know that there are massive security concerns around them. Also, the potential for mis- and disinformation is enormous. The hope is that with someone like Mark Cuban behind them, they'll get more useful and less problematic. And, of course, tomorrow is the deadline for TikTok. If they don't...
Midnight, yeah.
Right. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis, like it's to remind you, is what's your favorite social media app? And your choices are, in mostly alphabetical order, Blue Sky, Counter Social, Facebook, Mastodon, TikTok, WhatsApp, X, The Corner Bar, and I Hate People. So far, we've got 25 votes, and I Hate People, not, and I knew when I put it in, is first by a long shot. The other thing, of course, is this is the third week in a row I've had a lot of choices in the poll. I don't know what's going on with me, but yeah. I think next week my choices are just going to be yes and no. Maybe just no. That'll work. Well, anyway, you can give us an old-fashioned phone call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
But I heard this morning, though, the one company that wants to take over TikTok, you know, it's an American-based company, one problem. Servers are over in China.
Yeah. Well, also...
It's like, wait a minute. But yet TikTok, the actual TikTok, the Chinese company, they're here in the U.S., the servers.
Right. And Elon Musk has said he's mildly interested. So who knows what's going to happen where to who, but...
So he can destroy another social network.
Yeah,
exactly. But we have a lot of alternatives. I've been on Blue Sky and Mastodon and Counter Social for a while now, and all three of them are pretty good. Blue Sky is, I believe, my favorite, although I'm paying for Counter Social. Blue Sky appears to be my favorite right now. It's, no, Blue Sky is where I get the most
content.
People answering me and, you know, liking and replying and everything else.
Engagement.
Counter Social, I seem to have the most clean feeds. And Blue Sky as well, clean feeds.
Well, that was one of the points of having a pay service, is that it would keep most of the trash out.
Yeah, because they don't want to pay. They want stuff for free,
right,
like TikTok.
Right. Facebook is a cesspool. X is worse. I haven't been in a corner bar in decades. TikTok may go away.
As of midnight, it's scheduled to.
Well, TikTok is good for the illiterate, people who can't read. You know, it's all pictures. All videos.
So and in the early days, it was pretty neat. And creative people were doing some really amazing things.
And they're still there. They're just inundated
with
other
garbage.
Yep.
Yeah. There are a lot of really, really interesting people on TikTok, but you can't find them anymore. So,
well, you got to go through so much other junk.
Well, exactly.
And trash.
And even if you try to control your feeds, you know, who you follow, you know, the algorithm sticks in all this crap.
Other stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Because they paid to put their crap in your feed.
Yeah. Once you find somebody, you can go to TikTok and just see their stuff. You know, such and so is going live in 10 minutes. Okay, I'll log on and watch them. But you have to find them. You have to figure out how to get to them.
Yep.
And, you know, so many ads on Facebook. It's hard to see the content anymore. Currently, there are still ad blockers that work. We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, that won't.
You know, Google is getting rid of ad blockers, and we'll see. YouTube,
except their own
YouTube
ads.
Exactly. YouTube is almost unwatchable anymore. Because of the ads. It's just, you know.
Unless you pay an extra, what is it, $10 a month for YouTube Premium with no ads? Is it no ads or less ads?
I think it's less ads.
Yeah, because a lot of companies started doing that.
Fewer ads.
Yeah, because the one that I watch for my ham radio stuff, he pays for it, or through subscriptions, you know, people. But it's got fewer ads than before when.
Well, so, and that gets tricky because there's two kinds of ads. There's the ads that YouTube bought that get randomly stuck into your video at stupid moments. And then there's the ads that the creator of the video has. And they
Sponsors,
yeah. And they get put in the video.
They used to be called interstitials.
Yeah.
And they were on television too. So you'd watch Jack Parr on The Tonight Show, and he would do an ad for Chesterfield cigarettes.
Well, host read ads are even more expensive.
Right, exactly. And now we see interstitials all the time on things like YouTube. There is a program whose name, of course, I cannot remember at the moment, but it's a crowdsourced program. So what happens is you watch a YouTube video and you see an ad, an interstitial ad come up where the host is telling you things. You tell it when it started, you tell it when it ended, and when enough people do that, it skips the ad.
Hmm.
And I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. It'll come to me.
But if you're the first one to see that ad, you get to see that ad.
Right. The first probably 200, 500,000 people see the ad, but
that's what I've loved. You know, I picked up one of those tableaus from the regular channels so I could record some of the stuff that I want to watch on there. And, again, just like Sling TV, sit there, record programs, and then fast-forward through all the ads.
Yep. So I do that on YouTube TV. Yeah, I can fast-forward stuff. It's very cool.
Yeah.
uBlock Origin can block some of the YouTube ads.
Sponsor block for YouTube, it's called. Sponsor block for YouTube.
See, see, that's the catch 22, that if you don't get sponsors, then you lose your show.
Right.
Just like here, at, you know, member supported Jazz 90.1. If we don't get enough people sponsoring the shows,
we could disappear tomorrow.
No, and I absolutely understand that. And there are times when I turn off sponsor block.
Yeah, for you're watching a show you like, I don't mind.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But if I'm just browsing, you know, just surfing YouTube, you spend more time watching ads than you do watching content.
Yeah.
Got to watch a 3-minute ad to see the 30-second video you were after.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I in the morning, I tell my Google Home good morning, and it reads me the news. And I have both regular news and tech news.
I'm sorry, say again?
And the tech news,
so where are you calling from?
It's like four ads. Okay, then the tech news, then four more ads. It makes me insane. It would make insaner. It annoys me. It annoys me. But it is what it is. You know, we've said this 1,000 times. Nobody's figured out how to make money on the web except through ads. So ads it is. All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Good morning. Speaking of ads, if you are on Android, there's an app you can use called CleanTube. And if you are on Linux, there's an app you can use called FreeTube, and they remove the sponsored, the regular ads off of YouTube.
Yes, I have FreeTube. I haven't played with it much yet. I have it. I just haven't had a lot of time to play with it. But I agree with you. There are things that will help. But again, you know, as we said, the dilemma is if these people don't get ad revenue, they're going to stop making content, you know, and I get that. So,
and with FreeTube, you can import your YouTube subscriptions into FreeTube with a CVS file.
Yep. And that's nice. I haven't played enough with it yet, to really make a decision.
That's all I had. You guys got a great show. Keep it up.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah, that's CleanTube for Android and FreeTube for Linux.
It's the never-ending cat and mouse between the ad blockers and the ad creators.
Right, right. You know, the reality is the other way that people have figured out to make money on the web is through subscriptions.
Okay, hold on.
But they are not as lucrative as ads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I throw money at the people I like, but that it you know.
Yeah, most of the podcasts I listen to have had to cut staff, downgrade production, shut down studios, and they still say their subscriptions only give them about half the revenue they need to run what they had been doing.
Yep.
And what's a little annoying is that from a listener end, it's the same four or five companies that sponsor pretty much every podcast, which is great. They're good podcast sponsors, but then it's the same four or five ads you see here all the time.
What really annoys me is that there are a couple of apps that I would really like to support, but when you go to say, okay, I want to support you, it ends up being $25 a month. No.
A month?
A month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe a year.
$3 a month, $25 a year. I'm down for all of that. $25 a month is a little more than I'm willing to pay for your content. It doesn't excite me that much.
Mm-mm.
It would have to date me first. Yeah. All right, getting to back to the phones. Our next caller is JD, all the way from Altoona, PA. How are things down in PA today?
Still cold and snowy, but... You know,
welcome to the club.
You guys are used to that. Hey, I got four things for you today if we've got time.
Sure,
On everybody's favorite topic of bashing Microsoft, turns out the latest version of Windows has modified paint with something absolutely useless. It's called AI. Have you heard of this thing?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah. So I use paint for pixel-specific drawing applications. I basically create computer versions of blueprints, that type of artwork.
Sure.
And paint has now integrated AI such that anytime you manipulate the picture, it smooths the edges and blurs the pixel-perfect precision that it used to have, thinking that you want those fine grain, you know, those very smooth, luscious pictures of Photoshop. But if I wanted Photoshop pictures, I would have used Photoshop.
Right, of course.
So, just as a heads up for anybody else who uses paint in that regard and hasn't noticed this already, as far as I've been able to find, there is no way to disable it, and it just came in one of the latest updates, so heads up. I'm not sure if it's in the most recent update or the one previous to that, but apparently Microsoft has now decided it's going to steal your GPUs from you.
Every company is trying to put AI into their software because that's the latest buzzword.
Yeah.
Go find all those slideshows that say Bitcoin or blockchain and put AI in them now.
Yeah. With the GPU issue, they've decided that if you have two GPUs in your computer, they are going to be the ones to decide which one you use, and there's no way to override it except on a per-application basis.
The problem is you think you own your computer.
Yeah.
The problem is I did when I bought it.
You bought the computer. That's, you didn't buy the operating system. You bought a license to use it as they see fit.
Yeah, I didn't want the upgrade, and originally it told me it wasn't going to come because it doesn't have TPM2, and guess what I got one night without my permission?
Right.
There's a program from GRC that you can set so it never installs an update, even if Microsoft wants it to. With Windows 10, he called it Never 10, but he had a new version for Windows 11. I'll post that link again.
I wish I had known it was updated before that happened, so... But speaking to the issue with TikTok, we apparently have a problem with social media gathering everybody's information that's owned by a Chinese company, but we don't have a problem with a Chinese company putting hardware in every corporate infrastructure in America, question mark?
That's been becoming... an issue. The phone system has been completely compromised, and they have to replace billions of, probably trillions of dollars of phone switching equipment. A lot of government agencies are not allowed to use Chinese brand hardware anymore, and they've been replacing that. The problem is the U.S. government can pressure U.S. companies into putting spyware.
Right.
So the funny thing is, everyone's been afraid of the government spying on you, but it's never been the government. It's been every web page you go to.
Yeah.
Well, the real problem is that we don't make anything here anymore.
Yeah.
We outsource everything to some country in Southeast Asia.
Because somebody could produce it cheaper, and the CEOs wanted more profit.
Yeah. In this particular case, I'm thinking of IBM's old hardware division. You might know the name Lenovo.
I know the name Lenovo.
They've got pretty good products. Would you not agree?
I love Lenovo products. They're excellent.
That's what I thought. So here's the last thing I wanted to bring up. I work at a corporate infrastructure or office now. And all of our systems have, instead of being the big beige PCs, have been eliminated down to these little itty-bitty teeny-tiny, I hesitate to call them thin clients because there's much more to them than you're depending upon a server to boot up. But these are the size of a thin client, and they have a full laptop-type motherboard inside. They're not much bigger than the old 5 1/4 optical drives.
Right.
This model is called the Think Center, and like I said, we use them at work. And I got interested in looking at them because what I need is one workstation that boots Linux up enough to give me a virtual machine to run Windows XP on. Because all the stuff I've already talked about, I can do perfectly fine in XP.
Right.
So I started looking, and I was able to find these little boxes for as little as $50 on eBay, and started looking at them and got a couple. And turns out they have one feature that I was totally unexpected. They have a socketed AM4 processor in them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about shock.
No, most motherboards aren't socketed because it's cheaper that way to just solder it in.
That's exactly what I thought when I found out this information. So for $50, I got a motherboard with USB 3, multiple ports. Granted, it does require a CPU with an onboard APU for graphics because there's no room for a graphics card at all. In fact, there's no port to plug one in even if you opened up the case. But multiple display and HDMI ports, onboard Ethernet, wireless Bluetooth, and I got one off of eBay for $50, capable of taking up to 32 gigabytes of standard laptop RAM, which is also socketed instead of soldered to the motherboard, a SATA port for a 2.5-inch spinning hard drive or SSD, but also an NVMe port, too.
Go ahead.
This thing is incredible, and they have totally different, I mean, it's not just the AM4 models. They have a wide range of Intel versions. I've seen them going back as far as the 4th-gen processors and all the way up to the 8th-gen that I've looked at. Once you get up that far, it's outside the useful price range. They start to hit about $200. But even with an 8th or 9th or 10th-gen processor, if you're looking for that grade of system, $200 is not a bad price.
No, and the general
burn.
Yeah, the general name of those things are next unit of computing, NUC, the Intel NUC.
Well, these are a little bit bigger than that, but yes, same basic concept.
Same idea, and they come in multiple sizes and multiple configurations, and you can get them for as low as $50 and as high as $300.
So I'm looking through Lenovo's page, and they have their M75 small form factor, which is the small desktop. And then they have the M80 tiny. It's a tiny computer, and it's designed to be mounted on the back of your monitor.
Yep,
that's exactly the one I'm talking about. These ones are the ThinkCenter Tinies. And like I said, if you look around for them, you can get them for as little as $50. And they seem to be, I mean, even if you're just going to throw Linux on and use it as your daily driver for hardware, that just, you know, just a little cheap computer that can give you you use nothing else for your banking and your bills, it's a great little device.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, as enamored as I am by Raspberry Pis, I am very impressed by these little NUCs. And they're not any more expensive than a high-end Raspberry Pi. And you get a much better machine for approximately the same price. I bought a NUC, and I think I paid $60 for it. And it's an M5 processor with 32 gig of RAM and a terabyte hard drive in it. And I use it as a Plex server. And it's ideal. It's wonderful. Go ahead.
I would argue that they're not necessarily superior to Raspberry Pi, just a different use case. You know, for those who, for whatever reason, absolutely must have an x86 architecture for, for running other hardware or for certain programs that are only, like one of the things I need, a system for is I have to have Windows because the community has figured out that there's just absolutely no way this program will run under Wine, which is Fusion 360 for 3D modeling. You need a system for it, so you've got one that can do it. And I'm totally enamored with these little things, and I just wanted to throw that out so that anybody who needed a little system to play with, you know, $50, it can be a lot of money for somebody who's hard up, but at the same time, it's a lot better than $300 for a system when you just need something to play with.
Yep. Nicely done. Thank you, JD.
So, have a good day, everybody. Thank you for your time.
You too.
And we'll see you around.
Yep. Bye-bye.
I get annoyed at there that says the list price is $1,800 on sale for $500. How much does it really cost to make then?
Yeah, exactly.
And is that extra $1,000 just gravy for them?
Yes.
Yes.
What are you asking?
Yes, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, all of us in the studio at the same time, and you remotely. Give us a call, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. In the meantime, so much Microsoft news this week. But we only have 2 hours, so here are just the headlines with a bit of explanation and or commentary. Microsoft's January 2025 patch Tuesday fixes 80 days and 159 flaws.
159 in 1 month.
1 month. More importantly, the 80 days. Because
yeah.
0 days, of course, mean they're already being exploited in the wild, so update immediately. Microsoft 365 apps crash on Windows Server after Office update. Once again, a complete inability to test their own updates causes problems on their own servers. It's been fixed, theoretically. New critical Microsoft Windows warning is 3 zero-a-day attacks are underway. These 3 zero-a-days are different from the 8 zero-a-days mentioned earlier. Those were part of Patch Tuesday. These three came out on Wednesday. They're patch now. Update again. Microsoft ends support for Office apps on Windows 10 in October. That's right. Not only is Windows 10 support ending in October, so is support for Office apps on Windows 10. Good luck getting help after that. Even we may not be able to help you. Home Microsoft 365 plans... Home Microsoft 365 plans use Copilot AI features as pretext for a price hike. Microsoft desperately needs your money, and whether or not you desperately need AI, you're getting it, good and hard. Windows patches Microsoft patches Windows to eliminate secure boot bypass threat. This is a different patch from the other two patches we mentioned. Keep up, will you?
Patch for a patch.
Yeah. Microsoft begins force updating users to Windows 11 version 24H2. Who do you think owns that computer anyway? Nothing to see here, citizen. Move along. Azure and Microsoft 365 multi-factor authentication outage locks out users across regions. If you use multi-factor authentication with either of those products, you may well have experienced lockout. Should be fixed and rolled out by now. Hackers use fast HTTP. Hackers use fast HTTP in new high-speed Microsoft 365 password attacks. Researchers warn that the brute force attacks have led to successful account takeovers 10% of the time, which doesn't sound like much, but that's still millions of accounts. Also, 21% lead to account lockouts imposed by protection mechanisms. So if you got locked out of your Microsoft 365 account, now you know why. Okay. That's enough for 1 week, I think. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. There's just too much to handle anymore. Here's a bunch of 0 days that we patched on Patch Tuesday, so they could have been open for an entire month.
Or longer.
Now, remember, a 0 day means it's actively being exploited in the wild. So those 0 days could have all been, those 8 0 days could have all been exploited for a month before you got the fix. Then the next day, there were three more. And then the day after that, there was something. So, you know, keep updating, citizen. That's all you can do.
And that's the problem. You load updates. So sometimes Microsoft separates the security updates from the feature updates. So you can load a security update but skip the new features, but not always.
Right. And look, every operating system updates regularly. Linux updates all the time. Lots of little updates. But you don't have to reboot. You don't even have to stop working. Just click OK and keep on going. And again, because there are so many pieces and parts, you get a lot of little updates. But they're very good.
Carol.
They're very good at keeping up to date, whereas Microsoft really, you can imagine how severe it is, because Microsoft normally only updates once a month. They don't care about you. They only update once a month. And then the very next day, they update it again. That had to be pretty serious stuff.
So if they released every update as it was ready, it would be two or three times a day.
Right. But they would be little updates. Well, the other problem is they would be little updates, but you'd still be disrupted because that's the way Microsoft updates work.
Yep.
I get updates every couple of days on Linux, but they don't disrupt me at all. Unless, for example, there's an update for Google Chrome and I'm in Google Chrome, then I do shut down Google Chrome, mm-hmm. put in the update. But generally speaking, you can update everything and just never stop working. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Carol from Greece, New York. What's up, Carol?
I bought a new Android tablet, and I'm having problems setting it up. Hope you can be able to help me with it. I get as far as connecting it to the Wi-Fi, and it says it's connected. But then when I go to the next step, I get a message that says slow connection, and my options are to pick a different connection or to set it up offline.
Okay. So, who is your internet service provider?
It's Frontier DSL.
It's slow.
So, yes, the message is correct. DSL is a slow connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we have four other devices that use this Wi-Fi connection, and we've never had a problem.
It's not a problem. It's just letting you know that updates are going to take a while because it's a slow connection. It's not...
Well, yeah, but it won't let me progress any farther except to do it offline.
Well, and you can do that as well. So you can finish setting up offline, and then connect to do updates.
Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not going to, I mean, I won't have the same problem if I do that. I set it up offline, and then if I go to do an update, it's not going to come and tell me the same thing.
It shouldn't.
Well, it probably will.
It might mention it, but it won't stop you.
Right.
Okay.
So generally it would update overnight when it has a few hours to download and install.
Right.
Yeah.
The last Mac update was 12 gigabytes. On DSL, that would take a day.
Yeah. Well, because right now, it doesn't let me progress at all. So, all right. Now, I talked to a person at the store where I bought it, and according to him, the other devices that use this Wi-Fi, by the way, they were all turned off when I was turning it.
Okay, that was something you could try, too, is making sure the other ones are not trying to download big files themselves.
Well, they were all turned off. But according to him, even though they're turned off, they're still connected to the Wi-Fi. We didn't understand that.
They're still, the Wi-Fi still knows they exist.
Yeah.
But they're not using any of the bandwidth because they're turned off.
Okay, it didn't make sense what he was saying. Okay, so...
What might help, too, is go to a coffee shop, log in there, and do the setup on a faster internet connection. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a price of a cup of coffee or any of these shops, you can go around, sit there, buy some of their product, and use their internet to set it up.
Yeah, I'm skeptical of using stuff like that, though.
Well, the other question is... how far were you from the router?
I was sitting right next to it.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's just DSL is slow, and there's no getting around that. So if you set it up offline and then connect, it will take forever to do updates, but it will do the updates.
Okay. Now, should it take any longer than it does with my other tablet, the current tablet I have?
Yes, it might, because this is a newer operating system. And B,
more to it.
It's your first update.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Rob, that makes sense. That makes sense. Because I've done updates to the tablet I have now, and they take a while, but it's not.
Right.
Nothing.
Well, in this particular case, you may be updating an awful lot of stuff on First Connect.
That's why I say, you know, going somewhere else just to do the initial setup, I mean, you're not going to be setting up programs or anything else, you know, doing your online banking and all that. All you're doing is initializing the tablet to get the programs, all the basic programs in the tablet updated to the current operating system, which would be a lot faster elsewhere than trying to do it on DSL.
Or if you have a friend who has faster internet connection, go over and
visit them,
buy them a cup of coffee.
Okay, so is it safe to go and use an internet connection at a Starbucks or something like that?
Again, if you're not doing personal stuff, you know, you're just setting up a machine.
And virtually everything is encrypted now on your device before it goes out over the internet.
Yeah.
That didn't used to be the issue.
Right. It shouldn't be a problem.
Mm-mm.
But if you are feeling wonky about it, go grab a friend who's got faster internet. Invite yourself over for coffee.
Okay. All right. Well, I think you answered my question. Thanks. Thanks an awful lot.
All right. Yep. Good luck, Carol. Bye-bye.
And I just read the news broke a couple of days ago that Starbucks is reversing its open door policy. They're now going to start requiring that you buy something to use their internet. And my first thought was, well, didn't they already?
Right.
That's pretty much the, well, apparently it was an unwritten rule. It was a written rule at Starbucks. It's an unwritten rule that if you go somewhere to use their Wi-Fi, buy one of their things.
Exactly. You know, what's a cup of, well, Starbucks, a cup of coffee is, you know,
ridiculous.
The price of a tablet. But, you know, there are lots of
libraries are good, too.
Libraries are good. Cafes are good. There's lots of places that you can go. A restaurant. Go out to lunch with a friend, and while you're sitting there, update your tablet. Why not?
I saw a sign outside a restaurant that says, pretend it's 1990 and no Wi-Fi. Talk to people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, if I could figure out how to use my computer, is Bill from Irondequoit. What's up, Bill?
Lost.
No, it isn't.
Hold on.
Hold on. Dave's forgotten how to run the board again.
So many buttons.
So many buttons. He's working on it.
Yeah, that was a big problem during the pandemic, is a lot of people, especially in low-income neighborhoods, didn't have internet, so they couldn't do remote schooling because they couldn't get on the internet.
Right. Right, and that's been a problem for a long time. Of course, now the government has said organizations have to provide $10 and $15 internet connectivity in low-income neighborhoods.
And you get 5 megs if you're lucky.
Well, but you get something.
Yeah.
All right, we have Bill from Irondequoit on the line. What's up, Bill?
Hi, guys. I have a question. I've been working on a problem I'm having with my computer now and my phone for quite a while. I'm getting unwanted Zoom webinar updates or messages on my phone, on the calendar on my phone, and of course, calendar on my computer and my emails.
Calendar
and
spam.
I don't seem to be able to get rid of them because I don't have a paid Zoom account.
It has nothing. Well, it basically has nothing to do with Zoom. You got hit by calendar spam. It comes in waves, and we're apparently going into a new wave now. So, for example, you have a calendar. You can create an event and invite people to it, and it sends them an email that there's an invitation to your event. So now the bad guys send out a billion invitations using your email address. So it shows up on your calendar. It shows up in your email. So it's very similar to email spam. There's almost nothing you can do about it because it isn't Zoom sending it. It's someone else creating a fake event, or maybe even creating a real event on their free account. One of the only things we've been able to do to clear them is delete the calendar account from your device, and then add it back again, and it should forget all of the waiting invitations. And theoretically, if you can log into the web version of your calendar, whether it's Google or Microsoft or Apple, those events won't be there because they're not coming to your device anymore.
So eliminate my calendar altogether.
Yeah, delete it from your device. Phone and computer and add it, you know, wait a few minutes and add it back again.
Okay. All right. I'll try that. The other thing is these are all coming from seemingly the same person, somebody named Akpos, A-K-P-O-S.
Yeah, so in your email program, you can set up a block for that person, but not many calendar programs have that option. So the companies that make the online calendars need to be able to update now to add to combat calendar spam.
Yeah, I do have other events that come onto my calendar that are from actually real events that I want to take part in.
Yeah.
But they also are showing from this Akpos person. So I couldn't block that person, I think, altogether without leaving the ability to post to the calendar. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, your real event should say who the real person they're coming from.
Should, but don't. Everything says Victory Akpos, which is part of the problem.
You may have a deeper problem.
Yeah.
You might want to run the full tango then. There maybe something has gotten into your computer too. Ah, no. Could be a profile.
Mm-hmm.
A malicious profile got sucked in, so now the other thing we're seeing happen is websites will put up fake question boxes. You know, do you want to get notified about the latest sports scores? And you say yes, so then you get notifications. And because you said yes, it's not a virus that your antivirus can stop or the anti-malware can stop, because the program lied to trick you into saying yes. So you may have to go through your calendar subscriptions to see if you somehow accidentally got subscribed to a subscription you don't want.
Yeah, I've actually tried that already, but thanks for the tip. The other thing is that at least the emails, they don't have an opt-out.
Yeah, but your email program can block the sender.
Yeah. Like I said, if I block the sender, am I going to lose the other things that say they're coming from the same sender? And it sounds invasive, you're right. I'll run the tango. I typically run regular software, you know, cleaning software
But part of the problem is
tango. Like once a week, so.
Yep. And part of the problem is because a calendar subscription is not a malicious program. If you accidentally subscribe to a malicious calendar, then none of the programs are going to find that. You have to go through and remove that subscription yourself.
So if I, like you said at the beginning, if I remove the calendar, that should take care of that.
It should, yes.
Mm, should be in the keyword.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. I appreciate your help. Good talking to you guys.
All right, yep. Thanks. I have to be honest, I couldn't hear.
Yeah, it was very
fuzzy.
Fuzzy, yeah. So it's
he's on an iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
It's a new vector for spam. People are sending spam calendar invitations. You're invited to this event and the invitation is all the spam. And they send out, just like they send billions of emails, they send billions of calendar events now. Because usually, the calendar invitation is tied to your email address.
Right.
So instead of using an email link, they use a calendar link.
Yep. But I thought it doesn't appear on my calendar until I accept it from the email.
And it appears as an invitation. And so then you have to accept the invitation.
Mm.
Either accept or reject the invitation.
So if you reject the invitation, it goes away.
And then the next one comes in because they sent a billion of them.
Right.
So you're inundated constantly.
Yeah. So deleting the calendar account from your phone or your computer and then waiting a minute for all the messages to clear and then re-adding it back again.
So do you have to delete it or can you just turn it off?
I tried turning off and it didn't work. Maybe I may not have waited long enough, but deleting and re-adding worked.
Hmm. And of course, you don't lose your stuff because that's all up in the cloud.
Right.
And it all comes back again. That makes sense. So delete your account and then wait a while.
Yeah, I'd wait more, you know, a good 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
If they're sending out millions.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right, right. You know, you got to admire their ingenuity.
A little bit.
Tenacity.
If they can't get it, if you can block emails, they'll get you through calendar spam. So,
and there's been a surge in text spam now, too.
Like we said, it's since day one, this has always been, virus writers and everything else, it's been a game of leapfrog. It's always one jumping over the other to see what they can do. And, you know, viruses in that, back in the day were, oh, yeah, I was able to take down this network. And they slowly realized, well, they're not making any money off of that. So now they go to the spyware and malware where they're stealing your information, you know, your email address, your email list, and selling that to other spammers to make money.
Yep. Yep. It's a, like we said, you know, how do you make money on the internet? Well, legitimately, it's just ads and subscriptions. Illegitimately, it's just catch people with spam.
Yep. Constantly. Or fool them into different false ads, too. I mean, yep. I've seen a number of products. They sit there and say, get this product, you know, and they con the people into it, and they go ahead and send their money, and then all of a sudden that company's gone.
I just saw a what you ordered versus what you got comparison, and someone had ordered a Chinook RC helicopter, and the picture looked huge, and he got it, and it was like 6-inch long toy, puffy kids plush toy. And I'm thinking, okay, the price said it was $20. It's not going to be a big RC helicopter.
Yeah, I know. Hello. No, just like anything else, you get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And if it sounds too good to be true.
Probably is.
Yep.
But, you know, so many folks are so click happy and don't do any investigation.
Last one left.
Yeah.
Order the next 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I ordered my new computer, I told you I got a hell of a deal on it. And you got the same deal for one of your customers.
Yeah.
I looked at it and thought, crap, it's spam. I was actually convinced I was no longer on Lenovo's site.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten somewhere else.
How can they give a 50% off discount?
Exactly. It was only $48. So, yeah, it was...
send it back.
Well, I thought, I'm on the wrong site. And so I double-checked, I triple-checked.
Maybe.
I was fine, so I ordered it. It's coming in. It's going to be great.
They're trying to clear inventory before any possible tariffs come in and their sales drop.
Well, that's exactly what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
You know, Lenovo is, as with every other technology company, it is a Chinese-based company.
Chinese manufacturing.
Manufacturing company.
But Lenovo itself is Chinese.
Lenovo itself is Chinese, but Apple is Chinese manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Android is Chinese. Everybody's Chinese manufacturer.
So we're starting,
or at least somewhere over in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, we're seeing new manufacturing plants coming online in Vietnam. Right. But it takes 10 years and $10 billion to build a chip fab.
Right. So, you know, you could be right, and that was the thought I had.
Mm-hmm.
It's likely that they're clearing out inventory.
That's why I wound up...
Because they're going to have to stop selling.
Well, a few months ago, wound up getting myself another Raspberry Pi 4.
Yep.
And it's just sitting there just in case, you know, because, well, I've got 5 of them that I'm running right now, Raspberry Pis. 2 of them are servers, and 3 of them are different ham radio workstations. But if one of them dies, you know, getting the Raspberry Pis right now is really going to get harder. So that's why I grabbed another 4, and it's sitting there on the shelf in the box, and just in case I need it for an emergency. Because like you say, nobody knows what's going to happen with these stupid tariffs.
Certainly over the next 4 years. So if you've got an extra buck sitting around, it wouldn't be a bad idea to grab yourself another Raspberry Pi or a NUC or something along those lines, just in case. All right. That music tells us that the first hour of this show is in the history books. But for those of you who hate history, don't go away. There's a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show coming your way. A whole other hour of Dave Enright. Sadly, a whole other hour of Steve Ray. A whole other hour of me, Nick Francesco. And a whole other hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Take a quick bio break. Grab yourself a beverage, adult or regular. Grab yourself a little something to eat, and we'll see you in just a couple of minutes on the longest running computer show on the longest, the greatest radio station, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Right here, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And while you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415, I will read the news. Oh, it's Apple news this time. Apple recently addressed a macOS vulnerability that allows attackers to bypass System Integrity Protection, or SIP, and install malicious kernel drivers by loading third-party kernel extensions. This vulnerability was actually found by Microsoft researchers. They can't seem to find their... Never mind.
Yeah.
It's not a huge deal because it can only be exploited by local attackers with root privileges, but if multiple people use your machine, that's a problem. Apple has suspended a new AI feature that drew criticism and complaints for making repeated mistakes in its summaries of news headlines. Apple has been facing mounting pressure to withdraw the service, which sent utterly false notifications that appeared to come from within news organizations' apps. These false headlines, called hallucinations, but which really should be called lies, were attributed to news organizations like the BBC, Sky News, the New York Times, and the Washington Post, among others. All of these news organizations were, to put it mildly, a bit upset. We are working on improvements and will make them available in a future software update, an Apple spokesrobot said. A security researcher has worked out how to hack a proprietary USB-C controller used by Apple, an issue that could eventually lead to new iPhone jailbreaks and other security problems. While the hack sounds like a massive issue, it's not really a problem for the vast majority of users. To achieve it, the person relied on custom USB-C cables and devices. It needed clear physical access to the device to pull it off. But as with so many of these hacks, while it isn't a big deal today, we'll be keeping an eye on it as it evolves. This also has implications for when you like plug in at an airport or whatever. So we don't hallucinate usually. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. toll-free 800-790-0415.
And today's bugs can turn into tomorrow's exploits.
It's a real problem when you, you know, right now it's like they call it a proof of concept. It means it works, but it's not really easily exploitable in the wild. Well, that's just a matter of time, my friend, because the minute an exploit comes out, the bad guys work day and night to make it easy to use. It's a real issue that we've been seeing. You know, we just talked about calendar spam. Well, originally, there was no such thing until somebody noticed I can send a calendar invite to anyone on the planet, which means I can also send a calendar invite to everyone on the planet. So it's a thing that we all have to be aware of and deal with. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Yeah, gentlemen, I have a cold, but I'm hanging in there.
Okay, you've called the wrong show. We do computer stuff.
Yeah. If I start coughing, don't give up on me, okay? Yeah.
Okay.
Not that kind of
first
virus.
Of all, I got a comment on a saying, you get what you pay for, or a little less.
Yeah.
Tail end of that, yeah. Okay, so I had called a couple times about my blue screen problem, and I have solved it.
Ah.
Yeah. I'm running an Asus P9 X79. This thing's like 12 years old.
Yeah.
It's still a champ. Okay. The trick is I went into the BIOS in monitoring, and I was looking at the temperature monitoring. So I loaded a program. I think it's called Open Hardware or something like that. Monitor, and it shows the chip, the four cores in my chip are running at normal temperatures, but there's something on the motherboard that one of the cores is running at 109 degrees.
Uh-huh.
And I suspect it's something to do with the monitoring, not the actual heat problem.
Right.
I did some Googling, and that problem seems to crop up in a few places. I need to keep watching the monitor, but I'm going to shut the computer down someday until it gets completely cold, and then go to the BIOS right away and see what the temperature says.
Yep.
But anyway, that was a small victory for me.
It's a good victory, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
My average CPU core temperature right now is 143 Fahrenheit.
Yeah. Fahrenheit.
Yep.
You measure Fahrenheit.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the readout is in centigrade on mine, and that would be over 100 degrees centigrade, that's like 212 or something like that. That's woo.
Yep.
Anyway, so now I have a question about Money Dance. I'm trying to set it up for the nonprofit that I do the work for, and it's going to be multi-people accessing it, so it's going to be in Google Drive. And my one question is, if somebody is using the file and they leave it open and they go on vacation, obviously the file's locked. But I would assume that what I could do would be to go in there as the the boss of the whole mess, getting old, I can't remember the name. Anyway, administrator, yeah, that's it. All right, so I can go in there, I'll have to go in there and grab the file and then sort of wait it out until somebody comes back and tries to close it.
If you, that's one thing I love about Money Dance. Maddie, Maddy, will probably have the, if you post the question there on their website, Maddie will get back to you. And Maddie is a wealth of information as far as setting up different sharing of accounts and locking accounts and unlocking accounts and everything else.
Okay, I'll give that a shot.
Because, I mean, one other nice thing I like about that product is, and again, they're not paying me to say this or anything else, they are very good in responding back to you within the day. You know, it's okay. Not weeks that, you know, I mean, I'm constantly seeing them answering questions after questions, you know, based on the product of doing different things within money dancing, because money dance does a heck of a lot that people just don't realize, just besides finances.
Okay.
And I actually see posts that someone had made that money dance does not do any file locking. So anyone can change any record they want at any time. And so the article is where he created a way to do a file lock so people can't, more than one person can't edit it. It'd be interesting that it doesn't do any file locking.
Maybe, I was under the impression record that it locking. Did. I'm going to have to go back.
There's no date on this article, and it's very annoying when they don't date their articles.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I got to figure out how everyone's going to have access to the same Google Drive account in order to get at that file, but that's, I'll figure it out, I think.
Yeah, you can make a group of users that have shared access to the file.
Yeah, MoneyDance doesn't apparently have a traditional file locking mechanism, but it does use an internal syncing system. When syncing across multiple devices, that theoretically prevents conflicting edits by locking the data during the syncing process. Once it stops syncing, it stops locking.
So that implies that you don't need a shared library. Everyone just has their own copy of the file.
It seems to.
Well, no, the file is up in the cloud when you got more than one user.
Yeah, it does say that you can open and edit your MoneyDance data file on multiple devices simultaneously without a built-in locking feature.
Oh, can you put that link up? Because I was under the impression that it was... Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. All right, that's enough. Thank you.
Yep, good luck.
Later.
There's a... Yeah.
Trying to find where the
Fred.
Does it have anything on specifically in multi-user?
Okay, hold on.
In their documentation.
Yeah, I didn't see anything either, but I did find. What I did was I did a search on "Does MoneyDance do file locking?" and the AI overview, which of course could be lying to me. Talks about the syncing mechanism. So, who knows? Who the heck knows? It's a long road from
Tipperary
to hallucinations on AI. So, we'll see. All right. See, no, I hate you.
I didn't mean it.
Don't anthropomorphize computers. They hate that.
Okay, our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, I was just listening and thought maybe I could add a response to the guy using MoneyDance.
Yeah.
And again, like Dave said, I'm not paid to make this announcement. I love MoneyDance. My MoneyDance is synced to Dropbox, and I can open any or all of my devices, and even some devices that aren't mine if I have the access to MoneyDance to it, and they all sync together.
Right.
I can have them all open. And I've made changes on one device and watch it on the other, actually, when it does the sync, which is, I don't know what the time frame is, every few seconds it syncs. I can watch it actually change on the other device. So if I had multiple devices open and just left them open, I would have no trouble using MoneyDance from any location or any device.
Okay, good to know, Fred. Thanks.
Okay. Great job, guys.
Yeah, I just found an article from 2012 that says that they do that. You use a third-party shared drive, and you can have automatic syncing across all your computers. I'm still trying to find what happens if two people are editing the same record at the same time.
Well, that's where that...
Whoever hits enter the last.
Right. Pretty much that's the way those things work.
So I change it to 5, you change it to 6, I see it wrong, I change it back to 5, you see it wrong, change it back to 6, and we go back and forth forever.
Yeah.
Suddenly it's quitting time, and whoever decides to quit first loses. Money Dance is a heck of a program, but it was not originally designed for multiple users. The fact that it works at all for multiple users is excellent, but kind of a happy coincidence rather than a plan.
Shows how well written the program was.
Well, exactly. The people who wrote Money Dance really knew what they were doing, and it is a... It is astonishing that it's as cheap as it is. You can get started for free, but if you want to continue to use it, you pay. But it's not expensive, certainly not compared to
Quicken, which is a yearly subscription.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, last time I let my Quicken subscription expire just to see what would happen, the program did not quit working, which I was happy about, but two-thirds of the page started filling up with ads saying, you need to buy the current Quicken. And so less and less of my actual file was available.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Fairport, New York. What's up, Bill?
Yeah, hi, guys. I'm getting back to you after a few years' absence, and I got a question about all the... spam mail I'm getting in my TWC webmail from the Deutschland domain .de. I'm wondering what that's all about.
Okay, so a couple of things. Time Warner has no spam filtering.
Yeah, that's obvious.
Minimal.
Minimal. Well, let's say minimal.
Yeah. There's a button on that says filter spam.
Good for them. What you need to do is create a rule that says anything, unless you have friends in the DE domain, you can create a rule that says if it comes from the DE domain, delete it or throw it in spam or whatever it is you want to do with it. But that's really what's going to happen. You're going to have to manage that yourself, as TWC isn't going to manage it for you.
Basically, it just means someone in Germany, so a new spammer in Germany just came online and started sending messages.
Right.
Yeah, it's they've obviously co-opted a lot of addresses from the DE domain, and that's creating all sorts of outrageous stuff.
Yep.
Right.
I got to create a rule.
Yeah, you'll have to create a rule.
Which email program do you use?
Well, I'm using... using the TWC dial-up, TWC email.
Are you using the website, or are you using something like Thunderbird or Sparrow or one of the mail programs?
Could switch over to Thunderbird.
So the rules are set in your mail reading program.
Okay.
So if you're using the TWC web interface, you have to find where mail, it may call it filters, Google calls it filters. You have to go into the settings and find where to create a rule or a filter.
Okay, so I'll go in and poke around in Thunderbird.
Yeah,
Thunderbird, we'll do that for you. No question. You can easily set a rule in Thunderbird. So you can do that.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks. That's the way I was leaning, and it just confirmed it for me, so thanks a lot.
Yep. You're welcome. This is one of the reasons we suggest that people get a Gmail address. They are free, and of all of the email systems, I think Gmail does the best job of killing spam.
You still get some, but not as much as you would do on other services.
Right.
They're up to 2 billion messages a day they block.
They block.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would suggest... that if you don't mind moving, and of course, as always, we recommend, we encourage people to move off of any proprietary, any of the internet service providers' own email systems, so that if you ever change your email system,
Change your internet.
To change your internet provider, you won't have to again change your email system. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Don. What's up?
Hello. A couple questions. One, is there any indication, I have a PC that's about 8 years old, is there any indication that one would get that the hard drive is starting to fail or weaken?
It is. They always are all the time.
Yeah, it's a daily.
Are you running Windows?
Yes, Windows 10.
Oftentimes, you might experience slowdowns,
mm-hmm.
or you might hear the drive working extra hard to try to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they just die, and you have no warning
at all.
Is there the second thing? Is I've noticed there are some programs, and I wonder if you have any that will accurately determine or evaluate the health of a hard drive.
You can run. You're running Windows 10.
Yes.
Yeah. In Windows 10, there is a disk management tool, and that disk management tool will give you a bunch of interesting stuff, including an indication
of how the health of the drive is.
Of the health of the drive.
How do I get to disk management?
6 or 10 different ways. The easiest way is to type Windows R, hold the Windows key down as if it were a shift, and hit R, and that opens the Run dialog box. And then you type in all one word, diskmgmt.msc.
I'm sorry, I'm doing that. Would you repeat the...
You can go to the start menu and search for disk management.
Yeah, you can do it that way, too.
That's probably easier.
Oh, okay, because I'm on a view, type the name of a program folder document resource. It will open for you.
And in there you would type, it's short for disk management, D-I-S-K-M-G-M-T, disk management, .msc for Microsoft. I forget what the C stands for. But that would open it as well, or you could just search for disk management.
Okay, and disk management, MSC, is all one word?
Yes, and then in that window, locate the disk you want to check, which if you only have one, it's C, and right-click, select Properties. Under Properties, go to Tools. In Error Checking, click the Check button.
I've posted a link, too.
Oh, good. And Windows will then check the disk for errors and report any issues it finds.
Okay. Is that a program as good or superior to some of the others that you can download from the Internet?
Well, it depends.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily trust most of the things you find out on the Internet.
That's a loaded question there, because they're looking... If they're downloading something and they advertise it as free, it's not. They're just trying to pull you in to then buy their product once they do maybe some diagnostics. And they're always going to find something wrong on a hard drive. Mm. So then all of a sudden, well, you need our product. And before you lose all your data and use scare tactics to promote you into buying their product.
A lot of times the programs just look at the drive's built-in health program, which is called SMART. But the joke is that SMART isn't very smart.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. There is a really good commercial program called SpinRite. It's $80, so it's not that cheap. But it goes in block by block, sector by sector, examining all the data on the disk, spinning drive and SSDs, and can really rejuvenate a disk that has started falling off in performance, or let you know that it's really dying.
Yep.
It will also rejuvenate the drive?
Where possible.
Yep.
Okay, and tell me again the name of that program?
SpinRite.
Oh, okay.
And I've posted a link for that as well.
Okay. All right. Well, again, as always, thank you very much for your good information. And have a wonderful rest of the program.
Don, before you hang up?
Yep.
Back up.
Yeah, back up now, because the drive, you never know when your drive's going to fail.
Yeah, that's, and you recommend backing up to, well, I could back up to another hard drive from another computer.
Yep.
But again, that these are older PCs. In fact, I think running Windows 7, but they haven't been used for years, and I'm wondering again how reliable those hard drives are, which I would remove from the computers.
Look, you can buy a hard drive on Amazon for real cheap.
Terabyte, USB. Yeah, for under $100.
For under $100, and then you can add to it a carrier, which plugs into USB.
A carrier?
Yeah, well, it's an adapter device that plugs into the SATA drive that will then plug into your USB.
You can get a raw drive and then a USB adapter for it.
Well, I have.
Or you can buy a self-enclosed USB drive.
I have that, but it may be for an older hard drive that has a different terminal configuration.
That's why Nick was saying, go online, you can buy something new with more space. Most likely, it'll be a terabyte hard drive, you know, 3.5-inch drive, with the adapter to hook up to a USB drive. You're under $100. You get something new, something reliable that you can now take all your data from all your machines and
throw them in individual folders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which would you recommend, though? A spinning hard drive or a solid state?
I'd recommend an SSD, but in your case, you know, an SSD is much more expensive than a spinning drive.
And because it's faster.
Right.
For backup, you don't necessarily need speed.
You don't need that. So get yourself an HD, a regular hard drive, a spinning hard drive.
Okay.
On Amazon for cheap. Throw it, get a SATA drive, S-A-T-A. Get a carrier that does SATA at one end and USB at the other, and you're on your way.
It's a Toshiba 1 terabyte for $50 on Amazon.
Great. Okay, thanks, gentlemen.
Yep.
All right, good luck. Do that backup immediately. Everybody else, if you are not backing up, why not? Get on the backup train today.
Your drive will die.
Your drive will die. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. Back up, will you?
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York, on the line. What's up, Mark? Mark?
Hello.
There you are. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you? You're back, huh?
We're back. So are you.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're back in the studio.
Oh, yes, I am. Sounds yes, like I am. It's
great.
Hard.
Congratulations.
It's hard. I'm actually wearing pants for the first time in 2 weeks. It's a little.
I'm glad you're feeling better.
3 weeks, actually. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. The last gentleman was talking about disk stuff. One good program you can use that's free that you can periodically run to monitor your hard drives just to see what's going on is Crystal Disk Info. And it gives you great information what's going on. It tells you how many sectors are on your drive and if any of them are corrupt. And it gives you a little window that tells you when it's monitoring it, if the drive is good or if it's caution, it will come up yellow, green if it's good, caution if it's yellow, red, immediately replace the drive. And I find this program really great. And with your SSDs, it'll give you a percentage of how good the drive is. Like my drive is at 99%.
Nice.
Gives you the temperature. And like I said, it gives you a bunch of information and on, you know, regular, your temperatures, everything. Serial numbers, your, if it's standard hard drive, gives you your RPMs, your connection, power on count, power on hours, all that.
Nice.
So that's one program I tend to turn on once a week just to see what's going on with my drives.
Sure, sure, sure. Nice. That makes sense.
Yep.
And another good one, if you want to know the performance of your drives, they also have Crystal Disk Mark. And that will run and give you a performance on your drive on your drives. And it's from the same company. No ads, totally free.
Nice.
That I like.
Yep.
So I just thought I'd throw it out there. That way, if you are having a problem, then something like the Steve Gibson program,
yeah,
you can run that.
Run that, yep.
Yep.
So, especially for that price, that's a steal.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah. You really can't put a price on that anyway, so to save your data.
Right.
So, but I just thought I'd throw that out there so people can maybe run this once in a while and, know that, especially if they're not backing up. Mm-hmm. They really need to keep an eye on their drives.
Right.
And apparently this author likes anime.
Yeah, you have you have anime skins you can use.
Neat.
Right. The other thing people should understand is that newer drives, and I think this isn't going to apply to Don, who said the PCs were like 8 and 10 years
old.
Yeah,
running Windows
7. But if you have a newer disk, they may be SMART. S-M-A-R-T, Self-Monitoring Analysis and Reporting Technology, which goes right into the drive and says, and the drive then says all the stuff that Mark was just talking about. How often was it booted on? What's the health? How many good sectors? How many bad sectors? Et cetera, et cetera. All right, Mark, we got, I think, more calls coming in. We got to move along. Thank you. As always, calls are piling up at the end of the show.
Sounds like your name. Yep.
You know, this show is 2 hours long. You don't all have to call in the last 15 minutes.
Mark, where are you calling? So, we mentioned earlier that the disk smart is often not smart. Right. If it says status is failing, it's right. But if it says status is okay, it may not be right.
Exactly. Exactly. Never assume your hard drive is well. Always assume your hard drive is on the brink of failure. Back up as if you knew your hard drive was going to fail tomorrow morning.
A lot of the big disk companies like Google, DriveSaver, Backblaze that use a lot of hard drives, they've published statistics. An average lifespan for a drive is about 20% failure per year. So you get about 5 years average out of a drive. So some will last a month, some will last 20 years, but average is about 20% failure per year.
Right. So assume they're going to fail. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Clark from Ontario, New York. What's up, Clark?
Hey, what's going on? Top of the afternoon to you guys.
And the rest of the day for yourself.
I got a good recommendation on an app for you guys. I was in the market of buying a cell phone, and of course, before I spend my hard-earned money, I do a lot of research on YouTube and stuff.
Good.
And some of these people that test out these things, they made a good recommendation. I came across this app. It's called Geekbench 6.
Geekbench, yeah.
That's Geekbench space number 6.
Yep.
And it basically gives you a whole status. My cell phone was going on the fritz, so I ran the test on it, and I looked at the performance of it, and it basically gives you a great breakdown. It tells you like what everything's going on, what type of hardware you're using, and how like the benchmark scores and everything. I never really knew about it until I came across it. Figured some of your audience might be able to benefit from it.
Yep.
Great idea. Thank you so much. Yeah, Geekbench is a pretty amazing product, and it gives you all kinds of statistics about your machine. So if you have If you have questions about your machine, Geekbench is a pretty good program to run there. Thank you.
Have a great afternoon, guys. Bye-bye.
You too. Keep smiling.
One of the other ones I like is Cinebench from Matrox that specifically tests graphic performance and
Chuck,
how good your graphics card is.
Okay, hold on.
Yep. And almost every operating system has a program that will do the smart disk, to go back to that for a moment. So, yeah. Check your disks. Even if you don't check your disks, assume they're dying. And that's the way it should be. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Chuck from Penfield, New York. What's up, Chuck?
Hi, gentlemen. I have a couple laser printers. One's a Brother that's wireless, and when I set it up, you press a button, and it runs you through some menus, and it waves its hands. It says, here I am, and you press a button on the router and says, yep, I see you. Come on, get on the network, and there you go. The other one is an older HP that has a USB and network connection, but no wireless. And for grins and giggles, I thought I'd buy a wireless print server and see how that would work out. And I can print from my different computers, the ones that's wired and the ones that are wireless. But when you go into the print menu, it shows the printer there, and you can select it and print to it. The difference is, on the Brother unit, I can see it on the network, and on the one, the HP that's connected to the print server, I don't. Should I? Or doesn't it matter?
Well, it doesn't matter. That's the first thing. Yeah, it doesn't matter. I'm surprised you can't see it, but it depends on what wireless server you have and how it's set up.
Okay.
So generally speaking, devices announce themselves to the network, and you can see them on the network.
Okay, now should I see the printer as HP, color printer, da-da-da, or should I see Linksys server, which is what I'm using for the print server, Linksys device?
Well, again, it depends on, I'm not familiar enough with the Linksys wireless print server to tell you.
Okay.
But it should be one or the other, or neither.
Oh, okay.
So it may well be that the print server doesn't announce itself to the network, mm-hmm. and that you had to set it up by IP address or whatever.
Oh, so it's got to be a manual setup.
Right. And so it doesn't do any of that, but it does give the printer access to the network.
Right. Okay. Now, out of curiosity, with these printers that are on the network, if you have a printer that's plugged into your PC through a USB port, that PC owns that printer, so to speak.
Right.
And if you want to print to it somewhere else, you've got to print share it and route through your computer.
And your computer has to be on.
Right.
Old.
Those that are on the network, printers that are on the network, nobody really owns those, or does the network own them, or is it immaterial?
Well, basically, the network owns them, basically.
The printer itself might own itself. So, okay. Basically, there's a little computer in the printer sharing it to the network.
Okay. All right. Sounds like I got a little bit of homework to do, and maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't, depending on what the hardware capabilities are then.
Right, yeah. Exactly. All right, thanks, Chuck.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, we've got a lot of calls.
So many printers come with wireless or networking built in that the USB drivers to make it wireless are almost they cost too much anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is handy to get an old printer connected to your network when you don't want to have to leave the computer on and running all the time. On, running, and awake.
Sorry, I
got to
move on to the
Right. Yeah. So you've got almost every new printer can connect wirelessly to a network or wired.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them don't do wired. They don't have a...
Yeah, they're wireless only.
Right. But all of them will connect some way to the network. Older HP printers like Chuck has are strictly wired printers. They may connect to the network, or they may only connect to a computer.
Yeah.
And so to get them on the network, you essentially hook up this wireless print server, which pretends to be a computer as far as the laser printer is mm-hmm. concerned, and pretends to be a network device yeah. as far as the network is concerned. Okay,
if your printer has an Ethernet jack and can connect to the network, your wireless devices will also see it. So wired and wireless devices can all see each other on the same network.
Right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Rochester, New York. What's up, Bill?
So a couple things. I have a going on 6-year-old computer. It's a Dell. It has a 100 gigabyte SSD and a 1 terabyte hard drive. I still am in Windows 10. What's involved eventually going to Windows 11, or should I start over?
Well, it may be that your 6-year-old Dell cannot go to Windows 11.
Yeah.
And if it did, it would still be horribly slow. I would not put a 6-year-old computer of any make or model
on Windows 11. Yeah. No.
Theoretically, you could upgrade the RAM and replace the spinning drive with a solid-state drive, but at that point, you just buy a new computer.
You're just moving the bottleneck somewhere else, which we've said for decades.
Yep. Okay. Very good.
There you go.
Yeah. The other thing you could explore with that unit, though, is if you're going to get another computer, play around with Linux on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. 6-year-old computer, you know, it'd be a great candidate for learning Linux.
Right. Good idea. It's an i7, and you know, it still runs fine on Windows 10. I just
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you still got time to the end of the year.
If you go to the Dell support site and put in your Dell service tag, it will tell you if it's compatible with Windows 11, and have you download all the drivers you need first. Because after you upgrade, things may not work until the drivers are installed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I know it's been kind of a pain, which is the reason for my call. Another question. So I have an iPad, and I share it with my wife. And a number of my emails show up in her email. You know, we each have our own Google account, and when we open it... when she opens hers, some of my emails show up in it.
Yeah.
I'm confused.
If you have both email accounts on the same device, someone is accidentally sending out is the wrong person, so when the other end replies, it comes back to the wrong person. You have to be really sure of what account you're sending an email from if you have multiple accounts on one device.
So that's please hold.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you very much for your help.
All right, thanks, Bill. Fully recommend that anybody with an older machine play around with Linux. It's a great operating system.
Your name?
And everything is free.
Yep.
Hello?
We have a lot of customers come in and want to split...
Turn off your mic.
And want to split their identities that they were sharing an email address or sharing an Apple ID, and suddenly I'm getting all of her messages and he's getting all of my texts. You're using the same address.
Right.
So they aren't yours or hers. They're both of you using one address.
Right.
What's your first name?
I get a number of people who I correspond with who have both husband and wife, you know, Tom and Mary at gmail.com or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Yeah.
And I understand that, you know, they're sharing an account. They don't have to.
Yeah.
But they are. God bless them. And that's fine. So, you know. That's great. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Robert from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Robert?
Hello there. I have a quick question about the new New York State affordable band program for, I guess it's $15 for the internet right now, starting Wednesday. And the rate that they're giving you for the lowest tier is 25 down and 20 up. And if you're just using... the internet for movies like Netflix and email, is that enough for one person?
Should be. Okay. So it is enough for one person. You may spend a little bit of time waiting for that initial download to start.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's going, you shouldn't have any problems with buffering in the middle of what you're watching.
Okay. I just found a website that says as of February 2024. Due to lack of funding by Congress, the Affordable Connectivity Program has stopped accepting applications.
That's right, for the federal program. But the governor of New York...
I'm on the New York State website.
Yeah, well, that's not right. It's starting Wednesday. The green light already has the application online. Spectrum also has it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is. That's the federal program. Yeah, it, the Congress killed it.
Yeah.
But this new program is by our governor.
Right.
For
so
$15, which is tremendous.
It's tremendous. So 25 down and up.
Correct.
Should be enough for one person, absolutely.
Okay. That was my question, and I hope folks take a, you know, you could even just be on SNAP benefits. There's no income requirement. It's not just for women, et cetera. So it's really a fantastic program for folks with lower income.
Right. Excellent. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
Yep. Now, again, it's not going to be the fastest connection, but it will be a usable connection.
Yeah. And going back to internet speeds, our previous caller using DSL, you're lucky to get 5.
Mm-hmm. If you're lucky.
And now the cheap, slow internet is 20.
Right.
And most companies, their standard internet is 500.
Well, the phone service also has their own fiber service.
Who does?
The phone company.
Oh, yes.
Frontier.
Yes, they do.
Significantly more expensive than their DSL.
Yeah, but you're also getting a lot faster speeds, too.
Well, but as I understand, New York State, if you offer broadband at all, you have to offer this $15 tier. So that's a real nice...
Like you were saying there, that really helps a lot of folks that, you know, want to do it, but are limited income. You know, they don't want to...
Can you put a link to that for people?
I'm trying to find the one that says it's valid, because all of them I'm finding are saying they've stopped accepting applications in February of 24. So if you've already approved, you're lucky.
What about on Greenlight's site?
I found one from New York State listing all the internet providers across New York State in multiple counties. Maybe that'll work.
Right. I am seeing that it is there, but I don't see a link.
It talks about a federal program called Lifeline.
No, this is the $15 New York law. New York only.
Right, I'm finding one that says 925.
Nope, this one goes into effect Wednesday.
Affordable internet options in New York State from newyork.gov. Okay.
So it takes into effect $15 and $20 internet programs for low income folks. Now you have to be a low income resident,
right?
You know, many of our listeners will not be able to do this. $15 for 25 megabits per second and $20 for 200 megabits per second, and that's got to be taxes, equipment rental, all the usage fees. Annual price increases are capped at 2%. So there it is.
I'm finding news stories, but I'm trying to find the actual New York State button. Maybe New York State isn't running the program, or you have to call each internet provider yourself and go to the...
Well, that's what he said. It's if he said Greenlight has... For example,
Greenlight and Spectrum, he said, both have it.
Right. If you go to Greenlight's network, you can see a link that says New York State Affordable Broadband Act.
All right, I'll find it.
Eligible houses get it for $15 a month.
Oh,
and who's eligible?
I found one on Spectrum for $25 a month. Spectrum Internet for low-income households. So 50 meg for 25 a month. Remember when we were so excited about 10 meg internet?
Yeah. Roadrunner.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, and that's a drop in the bucket compared to even the phone fiber is faster.
Yep. I was working with a customer the other day, and he had gigabit fiber up and down. So gigabit up. But his router was in a crawl space under the house, and that was annoying.
Oh, geez, crackers.
To put the Wi-Fi in. Well, a lot of companies will install their equipment in the basement because that's where the wires come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's the worst place to put your Wi-Fi router because then all the metal I-beams holding the house up block the radio signal.
Right. Well, I used to have gigabit Ethernet. I now have 500 megabit Ethernet. And gigabit Ethernet, when my daughter was living at home, was essential.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can get away with 500 megabytes. So, so it's not as sexy as gig or 8 gig.
Yeah, but you probably don't see any buffering with 500.
No.
Yeah.
The only time we see any kind of slowdown, it's attributable to the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the discussion with somebody this week. You can do speed tests all over the internet, and some of them will be faster than others. And a large part of that is the fact that your Ethernet connection stays the same, but the other end may be serving data slower, depending on where you're going and what's in between you and them.
And if you're on a wireless computer doing the test, that's going to be limited by your Wi-Fi.
Right.
Which you may have had for the last 10 years since you got high-speed internet.
Right, exactly. So your, you know, speed testing, checking your speed is a nice bit of information, but it isn't really going to tell you you've got a problem unless you're seeing like 3 megabits or something along that line. So, you know, I'm like I said, I'm paying for 500 megabytes. I normally get in the 540 range, which is great. It's almost 10% more.
They give you more than they anticipate. Time Warner gave you less than they said.
Right. Although there are a couple of sites, if I check against them, I'm doing 450, 470. Again, I go back to another site, I'm doing 540 again.
Yep.
So it's clearly not me, it's that other site. All right, we're done for this week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. I really want to thank everybody who called in, but for heaven's sake, we're a two-hour show. Some of you call in at the start, will you? But we're done for this week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. See you in 166 hours. Be good to one another.